Christina, listening to, I mean, we're talking about Vietnam now, but your dad's family experience goes back when, to the 20s?
Well, my grandfather, Major General Robert Olds, was an amazing character in his own right. He was a World War I fighter pilot. In those days, they were called pursuit pilots. He flew in France. He was an instructor pilot after that. Later in his career, he was the very first commander of the first squadron of B-17s in Langley. He flew the B-17s back and forth across the country. He was Billy Mitchell's aide all the way through that court-martial. He was Curtis LeMay's commander. He was a major general, died at the age of 47 when he was commander of the 2nd Bomb Group. It just exhausted. In fact, he died a month before my dad graduated from West Point, and Daddy dedicated his commission to him.
Tell about your grandfather dressing up young Robin Olds in Washington that day.
Dressing him up?
In the Air Force uniform when he was 3 years old.
Oh, I didn't know about that. You know what?
You didn't?
No.
Oh, yeah, it was because he was supporting Billy Mitchell, who was being blasted by the government because of things he wanted to do. But apparently your grandfather dressed up your dad in a little, Army Air Corps uniform, and at the age of 3 took him to these meetings and the court-martial. Oh, wow, there's something you don't know about your dad.
No, I love it.
Wow.
And I've just started working on my grandfather's biography, so I'll definitely have to research that and put it in there.
We'll pull it out.
All right.
Back to Vietnam, Chappie James. Who was Chappie James?
Chappie James. So Chappie was Daddy's vice wing commander in England at Bentwaters at the 81st TAC Fighter Wing. I grew up with Chappie's sons. We were riding bikes up and down the streets in Bentwaters. And then Robin invited him over to be his vice wing commander at Ubon, and came over. And Chappie's just an amazing guy. He wasn't known to be the greatest fighter pilot in the world, but he was the greatest people person there ever was. I mean, and so the two of them called themselves, and it's politically incorrect now, but they were widely known as Black Man and Robin. And they were proud of that, too. And then, of course, Chappie went on to be our first African-American four-star general in Washington, D.C., just an astonishingly wonderful man.
Let's back up again. We heard just briefly in the film up front about your dad flying P-38s on D-Day and that period. Talk to that, would you?
Well, I will. And, in fact, I brought my dad's World War II diary with me. I never travel with this because it's quite fragile now, but I thought I would read the part that he wrote on D-Day out loud. This, then, was the long-awaited D-Day. Our job consisted of close-in escort of the boats, and a tremendous sight it was. As far as the eye would reach, the Straits of Dover were covered by every conceivable type of vessel. From small landing boats to huge battleships, the invasion force lay stretched out under us. I hope to never be privileged again to have to see such an amazing sight for such a show. The air support was marvelously worked out, and though from our patrol sector little was to be seen of it, our ships, airplanes that is, covered thousands of square miles. To my knowledge, not a single boat out of that vast armada was lost through German air action. Already, we have set up landing strips in the Cherbourg Peninsula, and the boys in the 9th Air Force are using them as of noon today. All right, I'm just back from another patrol. He actually flew 3 missions on D-Day. Just back from another patrol. The thing really is moving now. From our positions, we would see the motherships discharge troops into the landing barges, watch the barges crawl in an orderly formation through the smoke-laden shore, and then finally disappear in the murk of dust, smoke, and explosions. All the while, the battleships are pouring in their heavy stuff. We could easily follow the progress of our troops by watching where the big shells from our ships hit. God, I would hate to be a German soldier down there. Not one of their beloved Luftwaffe came up to bother us. It must be terrible for them to look up into the sky and see thousands and thousands of our planes lazily patrolling back and forth, to see thousands more come over to where to lay their eggs and to feel the blast of the unit's ground strafing. But the devils have asked for it, and they are certainly getting what they asked for. The worst part of that day for me was soundlessly watching the guys fall into the surf and blood pooling around them. Why have we been ordered not to fire on the Germans firing down on the beaches? Damn it, I could see the whites of their eyes. Disobeying that order was the hardest thing I've ever thought about doing.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
26 guys went over in the squadron. 9 came home.
Wow. And what a writer. Good.
Beautiful. Yeah. So now you can see how, you know, parts of the book, I think 60% of the words in the book are my dad's and 40% are mine, weaving it all together. He was a brilliant writer, beautiful writer.
John, you brought a couple of framed pieces out there. What are they? What do they represent?
This is a picture of the F-4 that I flew, and when we leave, they usually have all the squadron mates sign in the framework of the F-4. And another very coveted emblem was our final mission patch. This is one from the Triple Nickel Squadron. There were a number of squadrons in the 8th TAC Fighter Wing, but this is what we got on our final mission. Usually, the final mission, you're met at the airplane with a bottle of champagne, and you toast to the other guys that are around, and then you go to the club, and that day is the only day you're proud to wear your hat in the officer's club. What that means is if you wear your hat in an officer's club, you buy a round of drinks for everybody there. But we're proud to buy everybody drinks on that day.
And Christina, the jacket you got? Yeah.
Yeah, this is my dad's flight jacket from Vietnam. And it's got his 100 missions patch right there.
Yep.
It's Yankee Air Pirate.
Yep.
Looks familiar, John.
Yep, sure does. Got one just like it. Yep.
Wow.
I also wear his ring, his West Point ring. I had it sized down 2 sizes because I figure if I wear this wherever I go around aviation, he's right there with me. In fact, the pilot, Jeff Harris, who flew a P-38 in California, took this ring up with him on a flight to fly in the P-38 again.
Wow. Go back to the missions that, you know, he overflew. I mean, you're supposed to fly, what, 100?
100.
And he got up to, what, 152?
152.
So he must have shot down MiGs in those flights that he didn't fly, right?
Well, right? He didn't want to get sent home. And if he became an ace after 4, you get sent home with 5 and all the hoopla of a parade. And Daddy didn't want to have anything to do with that. He wanted to stay there and lead the guys home safely and continue to be a combat commander. And so he stopped shooting down the MiGs. He let the guys in his wing shoot down the MiGs. I do know there was also a tremendous bounty on his head. The North Vietnamese, I think, it had at that time like $25,000, which was a big deal to capture him. And so he was also told by Washington, because of that bounty and his fame, you may not lead any more missions. You may not. He said, okay, that's fine. So what would he do? He'd fly in the back of the formation, still leading the mission, but not leading it. Figuratively, he knew how to stretch the words, you know, stretch the definition. But I do know there was sighting by 2 people of his 5th MiG that he did shoot down. I've actually recorded the gentleman who saw that happen. They've tried to get it confirmed. You have to go through so much to get it confirmed. And I said, you know what, stop. Let it be the myth that he only got 4 and that he didn't want to come home. But he apparently did get number 5 and just was never reported or confirmed because he did not want to get sent home. He also told me, he said, honey, if I'd had a gun on that F-4, I would have gotten 10. So,
John, how aware were you of these stories that we're hearing from Christina?
I can attest to one. He did not take the lead to fire on one mission because he had 4 already, and he'd said to his wingman, it's your turn. And the wingman pulled up, and he got the MiG. Oh. That was her dad's desire to give credit to the people who followed him, and he was a leader's. He was a fighter pilot leader.
What, looking back on the experience, John, how, now with the, you know, the benefit of all these years since you came back from Vietnam, what's your feeling looking back over that experience personally, and what it meant to you, and how the, including how the war was prosecuted?
Well, it was a political war. We all knew as pilots and military there. We had all the equipment, the desire, and the ability to win. We were flying with hands tied behind our back. For instance, a MiG was only a threat after it's airborne. We could not strike MiGs on the ground. We would fly over airfields. We'd see the MiGs taxiing. We could not drop one bomb on a runway to deny them getting airborne. They were not a threat on the ground, politically. After they got airborne, yes, then we go after them. How weird is that?
There's a great myth that I've heard. I don't know if it's true, but it certainly sounds like a great Robin Olds myth. And people have come up to me and said, it's so neat. He used to do touch and goes on a Hanoi airfield in that F-4. He'd fly in and touch down on the runway and take off. Now, it sounds like something Robin would do, except I can't believe he would take that kind of risk. So I don't know if the truth will ever be known.
You're smiling, John. What are you smiling?
I don't know anything about that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
But looking back over the experience, John, what's it mean to you now that you were there?
Well, I feel that it was a waste of a lot of lives, unfortunately. And I can give you one case in point. A lot of the missions were directed from the White House personally, either by the president or one of his chiefs of staffs. Not the military, but the civilian. We would get those orders, and Robin would always say, we're not going to do that because there's nothing to gain, but there's attrition we cannot accept. We'll put that as number two or number three. And so the primary mission would be what we thought would be good. There was a general sent over. A one-star general came in. I happened to be in that briefing that morning. And the mission was, this was a primary target. Here's a secondary. He didn't mention anything after the primary and secondary. The general stood up and said, Major, who was a briefing officer at that time, Major, what happened to mission da-da-da-da directed by the White House? The major looked at him. This is Major Moore, by the way. His dad was a two-star general. And Major Moore became chief of the Thunderbirds, or the lead of the Thunderbirds later. But Major Moore looked at the general and he said, General, and he quoted a general's order or motto in World War II, I will never send my men where I won't lead them. And he said, General, I have a back seat in the F-4, and if you want us to strike that mission, you be the leader, you fly in my back seat, and we'll hit it. That general sat down, and we never heard another tone from him.
Wow, wow.